Swansea Writers, April 2026. Glorious Vanity. Bob Hawkins nudged his empty pint glass across the beaten copper of the barroom table. Opposite him sat Jim Kipper Jones, whose weather-beaten face was an object lesson in why digging roads through West Wales winters was no career for an aspiring film star, especially not after 30 years. Bob was no picture himself either. His lived-in face topped a scrawny frame wrapped in a Gannex Mac two sizes too big, fished from the back rail of an Oxfam shop 15 years earlier. Bob, however, looked much younger than Jim. Though they'd been friends since school, he'd taken a different path, scraping together just enough GCSEs to land an office job at the local Labour Exchange 5 years earlier. It was Bob who got Jim his first and only job, patching potholes for the council. Once settled into the steady rhythm of civil service life, he never moved on either. After two early, unsuccessful applications for promotion, Bob chose the next best option, to dig in. In his own way, he was a digger too. "You're round, I believe, Kipper." Bob's right eye flickered, betraying his thinning patience at Jim's wallet reticence. "I'll just finish my jar," Jim responded. He tapped the side of his glass, still holding an inch of beer, but didn't pick it up. "That pint has greater longevity than my nan," Bob observed, and she passed on at the grand old age of 96. "I like to savour my beer," Jim replied. "Is this savouring intermittent?" Bob placed an elbow on the table, cupping his chin with his hand. "Because I seem to recall that, when I'm buying, your throat magically transforms into a drain with no sides." Jim rolled his eyes. "Thine sword doth pierce mine heart. Well, hopefully it sliced through the hawser mooring your purse to your jacket, liberating it to perform its intrinsic duty of purchasing a couple of pints of Burton's best." Bob liked to display his command of English. It gratified his vanity to believe he was somehow superior to his friend. Two pints later, Jim stretched his arms. "I'm beat. Better get home to the missus. She'll be throwing a fit at me being out all hours." "It's not 9 o'clock yet, Kipper," Bob protested. "Stay for another. I'm buying." "I can't, Bob. It's Friday night." Jim shook his head. "Alice will be back from bingo in half an hour. We always have an early night on Fridays. If you know what I mean." Bob knew exactly what he meant, though not from personal experience. He had never married. He'd come close once, but said something clever at the wrong moment. Now he was used to sliding his key into a cold lock and being greeted by silence. As Kipper disappeared through the door, Bob ordered another pint. The last thing he wanted was to return to his empty flat and sit watching the psychopaths on the 9 o'clock news. Still, at least he could turn an elegant phrase. "You're the villain in someone else's story, April 9th, 2012. Mildred Adams is an eyesore. Did her mum marry a gorilla? She's a girl from school, built with the size and dimensions of a stone boulder, so shave her head and plonk her outside a nightclub and you've got yourself a bouncer. I swear if I pull down her knickers, I'll see her willy. Anyway, come lunchtime, whilst me and my girlfriends are hanging out by the picnic tables, she'll be there, eating by herself. Her miserable stink putting me right off my lunch. Delia tells me to ignore her, but I'm going to give it to Gollum Girl some day. April 11th, 2012. Yeah, I did it. I told Mildred what I thought of her. I said that geez was she ever ugly, and how it's not just my opinion. Everyone in school sees her as a gross blemish. I then asked her plainly could she please not sit near us at lunch any more. If anything, she's being selfish by polluting our line of sight. Cruel of me. Maybe, but I'm just telling it like it is. April 12th, 2012. Lo and behold, Mildred stopped mooching around the picnic tables and I couldn't be happier. April 15th, 2012. God, I couldn't help myself today. I saw Mildred enter the toilet stall next to mine and I had a naughty idea. I peed into my cupped hands and as Mildred sat down, I leapt up on my seat and flung nice warm pee all over her. I was laughing so hard as she spluttered like the retard she is. Sure, I'm a prankster, but can you blame me? It's disgusting how nice all the grown-ups are to Mildred, trying to help her come out of her shell and realise her full potential, when in fact she's just an idiot. All in all, Mildred Adams is better off sterilised before she contaminates the next gen's gene pool. April 7th, 2026. Today at work, for some reason, the talk about what we were like at school came up. Jodie swore she spent most of sixth form stoned out the bejesus, and Gerald, blandest man alive, showed us a photo of his edgy goth phase. As for me, well, despite everyone else almost bragging about being fucked up as teens, I at least was a decent kid. Everyone's friend, kind, caring, thoughtful, and never had a bad word for anyone. Is it vain of me to think this? I wouldn't say so. I'm just being honest. But Mildred, whom I've mentally dubbed Gorilla Girl, coughed and said I wasn't that nice. She insisted I went to school with her, but she must have made no impression on me because I can't recall her at all. Beneath the froth, the door to the coffee shop tinkles as Charlotte opens it. At first glance, it bears no resemblance to the busy hairdressers it used to be, though there is something familiar in the warmth that envelops her the moment she steps inside. It's called Froth, which Charlotte considers an appropriately shallow name for a place that was once called Vanity Hair. On the surface, it was just somewhere you came to fix your hair, but the healing went deeper than that. People left feeling better about themselves on the inside as well as the outside. Charlotte had spent many a Saturday afternoon sitting in here as a child, while her mother, aunt and gran worked, listening to the chatter that took place beneath the heated curlers. Women would air their woes whilst. Gentle hands massaged their scalps and emerge with hair and spirits lifted, a spring in their step. It was like magic. She hopes some of it still lingers in the air now. Looking around, the buzz is not so different. People's heads are bent towards one another over steaming mugs, the hum of conversation rising above the offbeat music in the background. The smell of perm lotion has been replaced with coffee, the sound of hairdryers with the grinding blades of espresso machines. But as Charlotte reaches the front of the queue, she's sure she can still hear her gran's voice somewhere amidst the din. What is she saying? Think twice! Charlotte shudders. Maybe it was just the barista asking if she wanted ice. Someone is leaving the window seat just as she approaches the table with her drink. She slides into the chair, keeping her eyes trained on the cafe on the opposite side of the road. That's where she has arranged to meet Dan. Yet something has brought her here first. She twists her wedding ring around her finger, her stomach churning. What is she doing? She thinks of Joe at home, probably making breakfast for the twins now, sleep-deprived and yawning, innocently believing that Charlotte is meeting a friend in need. Things haven't been easy since the children arrived, but don't all marriages have phases like this? Can I tempt you with a little something on the side? Charlotte jumps. A young waiter in an apron thrusts a tray under her nose, piled high with bite-sized samples of brownie slices. Across the road, she recognises Dan as he arrives. Something in the way he smooths his hair in the window's reflection before he enters makes her feel sick. No thanks, she says, watching the door to the cafe slowly swing shut behind him. Laughter ripples from the table beside her, and it feels like a soothing pat on the back. This might be a coffee shop now, but it still echoes with ghosts of the past. Still heals people. Charlotte reaches for her phone, finds Dan's number and blocks him. Then she leaves her drink unfinished and goes home to her family. Beauty duty. As Bella ripped the false lash from her eyelid, a hot, salty tear slid down her cheek. An avalanche of smoky mascara followed in pursuit. Flannel in. Hand, she began to scrub the orange skin on her face, enraged she ever thought she needed to be the colour of a carrot. Looking down at the cracks in her ornate gel nails, her anger flipped to exhaustion. Bella Blossom had had enough. What exactly had tipped her to this? Point, she couldn't say. Maybe it was realising that it took her 2 hours to be ready for a night out. While Craig, her increasingly inattentive situationship, had a quick shower, shaved, pulled on jeans and a fairly clean T-shirt, and was good to go. Maybe it was the comments from her CO workers that she looked unwell when she went to the office sans makeup. Perhaps it was the sting of the Botox needle as it jabbed at her tender temples, or the influencers on her Instagram feed with their glass skin and effortless abs that made her feel never enough, or possibly her month-to-month paycheck existence from a tiresome real estate job. Bella even cursed her name that linked her identity to her appearance. 3 months later, Bella looked down at her fingernails, now healthy pink tipped with white. No traces of chemical gel and treated simply with coconut oil. Her once-a-day check in the mirror revealed glossy, bouncy hair, albeit too toned as she grew out her roots. Some people pay a lot for the dip-dye look, she thought. It had taken a while for her to get used to a face that revealed her emotions. Lips. That were no longer plumped, and an ivory skin tone that reflected her Celtic roots. The less she meddled with her appearance, the more she felt like herself. Bella also benefited from increased energy that she used to concentrate on her values. Progress, however, was not linear. Some days her hand hovered over her mobile as she resisted reinstalling Instagram. If she spent too long staring in the mirror, the thought returned. Just a little tweakment wouldn't hurt. And every so often she missed the quick rush of confidence that came from compliments on her appearance. Her social conscience began to emerge in layers. Volunteering at the local food bank, taking part in beach cleans and mentoring, looked after teenagers in the care system. After years of scraping by financially, her cancelled cosmetic treatments unlocked a surprising ability to save. At last, Check Bella's wittily named Beauty Duty savings account was accumulating at a pleasing rate. Following a long day showing clients around a soulless new estate, followed by a restock session at the food bank, Bella opened a webpage she had bookmarked for years. She reread the course overview for BSc Social Work, lingered for what felt like minutes but was actually a split second, and clicked apply. The X4 files. The Daily Star. That's not your usual mum. Gwen thrust the newspaper in her mother's face, which she noticed was looking rather grey. I recognise the photo. The woman on the bus I told you about, the really friendly one I exchanged phone numbers with. They both looked back at the smiling eyes, the blonde shoulder-length hair streaking to grey under a red tam, the colourful but casual classic wardrobe of a woman of seemingly some substance. Backstory. I had seen the bus driver as I approached, vaping under the bus shelter, dodging the raindrops and studiously looking the other way. He sprung back onto the bus, started the engine, and indicated right to pull away. My heart sank. I knew he had spotted me. The next X for it would be another 30 minutes. Better to be luck. My voice trailed off in an explosion of coughing. I asked him to wait when I saw you coming. You okay? It's just the emphysema. Still getting used to the new inhaler, spitting everywhere. Hope I didn't catch you. I wiped a splutter of my sleeve. Such lovely colours. I indicated towards her raincoat, patchworked like Joseph's amazing technicolour one. I really should wear a face mask. Don't worry about me, lovey. Immune system of an ox since I separated from my ex. He was a gambler. Why not spend on myself? It's a... She mentioned a name which I don't recall now, but recall recognising was from one of those very expensive chain stores you find in artsy tourist villages. All vanity, really. The journey passed in a blur of conversation. In the 23 minutes from Merthyr Vale to Ponte bus station, I learnt she had downsized and moved to Merthyr 9 years ago, after the breakup, that she still sang in a skiffle band, was a virtuoso on the T-chest bass, had lived in Chicago for years where she had gained a PhD in skiffle, had appeared with the Vipers, still composed her own songs, and just released her latest on TikTok, and had a motability car which was driven by a new friend. Not that I'm looking. I think he's a bit weird. He's just bought 3 new hamsters, built a room-size cage inside his living room, and moved his bed in with them. By the time we parted at Pontypridd, we could have been lifelong. Friends, I had told her all about Gwen and the issue we don't talk about. We swapped phone numbers. I lost hers. I heard no more. Perhaps an explanation was that she had been locked up the same day. The Star's headline, bus attack deaths, 5 charges of murder had been filed and passed to Merthyr Crown Court for trial and sentencing. Seems she had made a habit of befriending women on the bus journey from Merthyr to Pontypridd.